All right, welcome everybody to another edition of the Grueling Truths Tuesday Night Boxing Show, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, a new interactive football app where you get to call what you think the offense or defense should do during a live NFL game and to see what all other fans have called. Check out Gridiron Mo at www.gridironmo.com. As always, I'm your host, Mike Goodpasture, and I would like to welcome in my co-host from Ringside Report, Dave Sidursky. How you doing tonight, Dave?
I'm doing great. How you doing, Mike?
All right. We got a special guest tonight. Our guest tonight is the former WBC lightweight champion of the world and was just recently elected to the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. Help me welcome to the Grueling Truth, David Diaz. How you doing, David?
Not bad. Can't complain. I'm feeling really humbled for that nomination. And, you know, it's something that we're getting recognized here in our hometown for it. So it's awesome.
Yeah, that always makes it more special when it's in your own hometown.
Yes, sir.
So you talk about your hometown. You grew up in Chicago. Tell us exactly when you started boxing and what you really loved about the sport.
Well, I started boxing at a very tender age of 8 years old. I enjoyed the sport so much that I just loved fighting and loved working out. And to be honest with you, loved going on those trips, you know, because you were able to stay at hotels, get per diem, eat, come back home from a trip with money. And the best thing about it was that you came back home with a victory. And that really helped out a lot.
Hi, David. You had a very decorated and impressive amateur career. Could you tell our listeners a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, Well, here in the city of Chicago, I started boxing in the Chicago Park Districts, which is, you know, a free program that they still have here in the city of Chicago for the kids that want to box. If you want to box, it's absolutely free up until the age of 18, I believe it is now. But back then, it was free for everybody when I first started. And it was the sport that my dad didn't have to come out a lot of his pocket. So I couldn't do football, I couldn't do baseball, I couldn't do karate or anything else. So boxing was the next thing, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. Ended up right away fighting after my first month of training there in the gym. I ended up having my first fight, and I ended up actually losing my first fight, which drove me more to wanna win my next one and hopefully eventually end up fighting that same guy that beat me again and beat him. And that's what it was. It was just a will to train hard and to work out, and I loved fighting. I enjoyed it a lot. And we ended up fighting for such a long time as amateur. We won like numerous Chicago Park District championships. After that, we ended up fighting in the states and then the regions and then the national tournaments. When I was 15 years old, I won the Junior Olympic Nationals, and it was like my first trip to go represent the U.S. And we actually ended up going to Ireland for that. And that's where my Olympic dream began. I started saying, you know what, this would be an awesome thing to represent the U.S., but it'll be awesome if it's like in somewhere like in London, Paris, or somewhere like that. And, you know, little did I know, I didn't realize that 4 years later I would be in Atlanta, you know. It was just down the street from Illinois. I could be there in 9 hours. And but the most important part about that journey was that my parents – at that time, we were not able to leave the country because they were not documented to be able to travel. So it was kind of easier for them to come to Atlanta than to go out of the country to go watch me fight. So it was awesome because a lot of my family and friends were able to see me participate in the Olympics.
Hey, probably, as you just said, the highlight of your amateur career was – probably, at least from what I looked at, outside of just fighting in the Olympics, was when you upset former future world champion Zab Judah in the 1996 Olympic trials. Can you tell us a little bit about the 96 trials and what you remember about that night?
Well, I mean, it was actually an awesome tournament. We knew we were going to end up meeting each other. I had previously fought Zeb Judah in a couple of months before that in the PAL Nationals. And we ended up going to the finals, and he ended up beating me. I don't remember what the score was, but he ended up getting the decision over me in the PAL Nationals to end up eventually going into the Olympic trials. So, you know, that was one of the ways that we were trying to get into the Olympic trials. So we ended up doing the Golden Gloves, which was the last tournament to try to get in. I ended up winning that tournament, so we ended up meeting in the Olympic trials. And I won all of my fights. I believe he ended up losing in one of his matches. So he was in the what they call the loser's bracket. And we ended up meeting up in the finals of that tournament. And I believe I was down in the last round because they told me, you know, they were like, hey, you're down. You're not winning this fight. You got to go out there and take it to them. And that's what we did. We gave our best effort and threw out there a lot of punches, and we ended up winning the victory and getting the victory and now to Augusta.
David, I have a quick follow-up question. What are your memories about competing in the 1996 Olympics?
They're awesome. I mean, I had a great time. I was my goal I just wanted to represent the U.S. In the Olympics. That was my dream. I ended up losing to Octay Urkel, who won the silver medal, which was a kind of like a, you know, I don't know. I just think we all got robbed that year, man. our fights. We ended up just not getting the points that we were supposed to get in the fights. You go over them fights over and over, and Floyd definitely should have won. Fernando should have won. Myself, I think I should have won. And Tarver, I think, was another one who yeah. got really jammed up. But you know, it's part of, you know, the amateur experience, and we ended up doing it. But it was a great time for me. Great moment that I have in my boxing career, which I'm very happy for.
Well, when the Olympics were over, you turned pro. Can you tell us a little bit about your pro debut, which you remember about that night?
Yeah, that was actually in Albuquerque, New Mexico. I fought under the undercard of Johnny Tapia, and it was my first four rounder. So obviously, it was pretty cool. I had a great time. I'm not going to lie to you. I was nervous. I was very nervous for that first pro bout. I had done a little bit of sparring before with a lighter weight guy to try to see how the punches felt as a pro fighter. And they hurt from a 112, you know, so I was just like, oh, man. You know, I was fighting at 140, so I'm like, man, this guy's going to hit me hard. But we ended up winning. You know, it was a great experience, and I knew that I wanted to become a world champion. Then I was like, yeah, I could do this, and hopefully one day become a world champ.
David, you won your first 26 straight fights until a loss to Kendall Holt. Did that loss change the way you approached your career?
No, actually it didn't, man, because I honestly felt I was doing real good in that fight in the way I was fighting. I mean, I always kept my fighting the same way. Now, what it did make me change was the weight division that I was competing in, you know. Whether it be 5 more pounds, it's a big difference in height, not in strength necessarily, but in the height of the opponents that you end up fighting. Kendall Hall was obviously taller than I was. Everybody is. And, that's what it made me realize, just that if I drop at least 5 more pounds, the guys will probably be my age, if not just 1 or 2 inches taller than myself. And it'll probably make it a lot easier for me to to compete and win the fights. Had nothing to do with the power or anything like that. It just had to do with the hype.
Well, after that, you went on another winning streak, and you won, I know, the interim WBC lightweight title. But then it comes to where you fight Eric Morales in your hometown. Eric Morales was an absolute legend. Tell us a little bit what it was like to fight a lightweight championship fight in your hometown and to beat a legend like Eric Morales, and what was a great fight.
Well, I was actually, that was a bucket list or not, yeah, per se, a bucket list or a dream that I had, because my first time to fight for the Chicago Golden Gloves was actually in that same arena, but it was named differently. It was called the Rosemont Horizon before it was the Allstate Arena. And what happened is that for that fight at in the Golden Gloves, I told myself coming out, man, because there was a lot of people there, and I was like, man, one day would be awesome to come here to defend a title or to win a title in my whole town. So I was really happy that I was able to do that in Chicago and against a great legend like Aaron Morales. And the way the fight went, I think it was just almost short of a Rocky thing, because for myself, I mean, to be knocked down and to come back and win the fight, it just showed the heart that I had to want to win in front of my hometown and to be called the world champion legitimately, because before that I was intern. So, you know, I mean, it's all those emotions that came in, and it was just one of the best moments of my life as well, you know.
David, what were your recollections of fighting Manny Pacquiao in June 2008?
A blur. No, I'm joking.
Manny was the blur, wasn't it?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I like I said once and I said before, that guy was just too much for me, and he was the best, the better fighter that day. My game plan did not work. I thought I was going to be stronger and be able to bully him a little bit, but that was not the case. He was just a lot faster than I was, and I felt very confident just because of the simple reason that I felt that I had fought fast opponents before. I beat Zev Judah in the amateurs, which is a fast fighter. You know, I fought a lot of other guys that were just as fast, but I mean, this was just a whole different speed I had never seen before, and you know, it's part of the process of this beautiful sport of the boxing game. I tell everybody all the time, there's three outcomes of these fights. You know, there's you win, you lose, or you get put down. You know, it's just part of it. You know, and like I said, at the time I at the time and now, I still take off my hat to him. He was a better fighter, and his game plan was better than mine, and he ended up winning. And you know, look what he went to do afterwards. So I didn't feel too bad afterwards.
Well, after that fight, you had a longer than normal layoff. You came back. You beat a very tough Jesus Chavez. Was there any kind of mental block after the loss to Pacquiao?
No mental block whatsoever, man. That's just part of it. No, nothing to be afraid of or think about anything like that. My mindset has always been go forward and throw punches, and I feel that I did that throughout my career. There was no mental blockage, no nothing. I still enjoyed the sport at that time, and I still loved it. I still loved working out, and we ended up putting on a little win streak and ended up, you know, fighting again.
David, you got another title chance against Humberto Soto in March 2010, but lost. Did you consider retiring at that point?
You read my mind, man. Yes, I did. I had, at that time in my life, I through the fight with Humberto Soto, I seen a lot of openings that I could have took advantage, but I wasn't able to commit to it like I used to. I was second guessing my speed, my range, my power, and I think that's what afterwards I told myself, you know, maybe this is it. I even told my coach, maybe this is it, you know. And, you know, they talked to me. They're like, you know what, it's still too early, you know. Take a couple months off, come back and see what happens. See how you feel in the gym. So I did that, and we ended up going at it again. You know, I started feeling good. I started feeling confident that maybe I had a couple of years left in the tank. And you know what happened after that.
Yeah, your final fight was against a tough young fighter by the name of Hank Lundy. You knocked him down early, but he eventually lost the fight. What pushed you to retire after that fight?
That fight, actually what pushed me was I said to myself, I want a rematch right away. I wanted a rematch. And I was sitting there in the locker room in the couch, and then I just had my head down. I was like, I got to get a rematch. I'm going to get a rematch. I'm going to get a rematch. Then I was like, all right, so we got to start working out. We got to start running. We got to start watching our weight. And I was like, oh, man, I don't think I'm ready to do that again, you know. So I think my work ethic and my sacrificing, I had come to a conclusion with it or to a point where I was like, man, this is becoming work. And I loved boxing, that I didn't want to hate it. So I ended up deciding later on, a couple of months later, I ended up telling my wife, you know what, babe, I think I'm going to retire. And she was very happy, obviously, because of, you know, obviously the fights and the losses and the punches and stuff. She never wanted to see that. She, you know, so she ended up actually taking a picture of me when I was in the dressing room, and it showed me just, you know, with my head down and then just thinking about, man, I got to do this all. You know, I told her, you know, that's the time where I started thinking and saying, you know, maybe this is the time to call it a day. I can communicate well with people. I still have my wits. I carry a good conversation with people, and you know, I gave this sport a lot of my years. I sacrificed a couple of things and to achieve what I was able to achieve, and I'm happy. I'm content with my career. I reached a lot of milestones that I honestly never thought I would. Honestly, to be honest. And I'm actually happy at retirement now. And I can eat anything I want. I can have my cigar. I can have a couple of beers and, you know, and not feel guilty about it.
Hey, you can't drink beer if you're boxing?
You know, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. I wouldn't drink beer. You know,
I'm glad I played different sports then, David.
That's why I should have became a hockey player or a baseball player, you know?
Well, I can't ice skate, so that's not what I did. So.
David, I'm just a great, great answer. Just curious, how would you like fans to remember your career?
That I always came there to give them a great fight, you know? I mean, and to be honest with you, when I walk around Chicago and people see me and they talk to me, they're like, man, David, you fought your heart out. And that's exactly what I want them to know, that I went out there to perform for them. And, I mean, I'm not no musician or anything like that, but we went to go out there to win, obviously, for ourselves, because that's going to get us a better payday, more recognition, and more fights. But the thing that happens is that people come out of the when you are in the stands with the people, they're like, man, great fight, David. Man, you gave it your all. Or even in my defeats, they're like, man, you fought your heart out with Pacquiao, with Humberto Soto, and with Lundy. It just didn't work out. And I'm like, hey, you know what? It's part of the process, man. It's part of things that happen in boxing. you know, and I'm happy with the feedback I get from people. And especially just the other day that you said that we got nominated, I mean, into the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame, the messages that I received and the love that I received from the fans and from everybody, it just made it more real that what I did was give them my all, and they responded back with great comments. And even when to this day, when I go out and meet people, they're like, man, thank you so much for the fight you gave us. And it makes me feel happy.
Well, and the thing is, we talked about that earlier. You just spoke about it a little bit. You just recently got elected to the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. You talked about what it meant to the fans and your relationship with the fans. What does it mean to your family?
Oh, man, I mentioned it to my dad. And my dad's the one that got me involved, guys, at the young age of 8. And he looked at me with a big smile, and he says, "Wow, get out of here. We did it?" I was like, "Yeah, Pops, we did it, man. All that sacrifice, all that hard work, we're doing it." You know, I mean, this is one stepping stone. Maybe some other things will come down the line. Maybe someday we get to Casa Nostra, you know, and we get into the Boxing Hall of Fame, you know. And it's an awesome feeling. It's an awesome feeling.
David, what are you doing nowadays?
Right now, I actually run a boxing program in Cicero, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. It's 15 minutes outside of Chicago. And it's a boxing program that we've been running for like 2 years that has been going phenomenal. I've got like about 4 kids that actively box in tournaments and that I take out to go fight in Chicago. And one of them is like, yeah, you can see something special in that kid. And he's doing pretty good for himself. Right now he's got 8 fights, I believe, with 1 loss only. And ended up fighting, obviously, a more experienced fighter. But we told him, hey, it's part of it. You got to sometimes fight guys that are better than you so you can become better. And doing that, and also real estate. We caught the real estate bug. Been doing that for the last 9 months, and I can't complain. It's going pretty good.
Awesome.
Well, how has your career as a boxer helped you with life afterwards, and what are the most important life lessons you've learned from your time in the ring?
Well, like I was telling the kids today, I was making them go through a tough workout, you know, that I told them, hey, listen, you know what? This is going to be like life. You're going to feel that everything's against you, that you can't do it anymore, that you can't do that one more push-up. You can't do 5 sit-ups. You can't do 10 more jumping jacks. But your coach is asking you to do that, which means that you got to go out there and do it so that in life you are able to tackle anything that seems hard to you and be able to compete against it and win. So my fighting was a direct correlation with life. You know, you're gonna have your bumps and bruises along the road, which is your training and doing all of that. But you will end up victorious if you keep at it. You know, not everything is done overnight. Everything takes time, and boxing has taught me to be patient. It took me 10 years to become an Olympian. It took me another 10 to become a world champion. And if it has taught me anything, is that it has taught me to be patient. it'll come to whatever it is that I'm working at.
David, great answer. For the fans out there, what don't we know about the life of a boxer that we would be surprised by?
Oh, man, I don't know. I mean, I'm just a regular guy. You know, I mean, I'm honestly just, you know, my wife makes me go buy groceries sometimes. I got to throw out the garbage. Sometimes I help her clean around the house. I definitely do dishes, man. I'm going to tell you that right now. Just the normal person's life, man. And that's it. I mean, I take my kids out. to baseball practice. I enjoy time with my kids, enjoy time with my wife. My wife actually is what has what I believe she's been like the backbone of our family during my boxing career, because she took care of my boys and myself, and I owe her a lot for my career. My success has been actually she was part of it.
Yeah, that's why you got to do the dishes, David.
That's it.
I hate folding laundry myself, but I can handle the dishes, but I just hate to fold laundry.
You know, I didn't want to say it, but yeah, she has me folding laundry too, man.
Oh, I hate that. I don't mind throwing it in and washing it and then throwing it in the dryer.
That's the easiest part, man.
I know, that's why I like that. But then you got to fold it.
That's why I
see me, I'm a guy, so I don't want to do like 10 loads. So I'll throw like too much in the one load. I have to dry it twice to get it dried. And then I take it out and I think, damn, this is going to take me like 25 minutes to fold this.
I didn't realize the other day I put in blacks with whites, and it doesn't, your whites don't come out as white. So,
oh, you know the bad thing? My wife is used to me doing it. The thing that worries me is I got a 15-year-old boy. And I guess one of his shirts that he just got that was kind of red, a dress shirt, I guess I put it in with whites or something.
Yeah.
And it leaked, or like some tan pants, and it leaks off onto his, and he sat there and yelled at me. I thought I had a daughter again. My daughter left the house. I mean, she's like 22, but it's like I got another daughter now, since he wants to look pretty for all the girls at the high school. So
I wasn't blessed to have a daughter, so I won't. I have three boys, 10, 8, and 6.
Well, I'll tell you, Dave, you're not missing much with the daughter thing, because once they turn about 13 or 14, it's nothing but a pain in the ass. It is, seriously. I mean, boys are a little bit of a pain, especially because I got like a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old, so they want to fight all the time. So it's like pay-per-view night here, at least for 10 minutes every day. With the daughter thing, it's a pain in the ass, David. You didn't miss anything on that one. I mean, like I said, it's awesome till they're 12 or 13 or daddy's little girl, but once they get 13, they don't want to have anything to do with it anymore.
No.
Until they get to be like 20 and realize everything you told them before was right.
True, right? Yeah.
So how would you, because you talked before, I mean, I'm coach professional football, my boys – they play football, or my oldest boy now plays high school football, kind of freaks me out. How would you feel or react, or do your boys come to you and say they want to be a boxer?
Well, you know what? The funny thing is that the middle kid, Elias, the 8-year-old, when he was 6 2 years ago, he wanted to do it because I would come back home and I would always mention, oh, my little guys, my 6-year-olds. So I don't know, I guess he got jealous or whatever, and he ended up one day telling me, hey, Pops, I want to go fight your little guys, your little guys. I'm like, you really do? I'm like, come on, let's go. So I took him, he did 3 rounds, did awesome. So I said, okay, he's going to be good. Let me send him to my friend, have him spar over there. He sparred over there, and he did great. Then we brought him back on Saturday, he sparred again, and he did really good. But after that, he has never said anymore he wants to box. So I don't know. I don't know what it is. We'll see what happens down the line if they ended up telling me, hey, you know what, I want to box. And would I want them to? No. You know, I want them to achieve greatness in other areas. That is not just about boxing. I want them to go to school. I want them to go to college. I want them to be baseball players or soccer ball players. I want them to try other things that I couldn't try. And they could probably be great at that because my kids, about 2 years ago, I had them in taekwondo. They ended up going to the Nationals in just their first year. You know, they didn't win it, but I told them, hey, you guys made it faster than I did.
Great. Dave, I'm sorry. I should call you David. I go by Dave. Gets confusing sometimes.
It's okay.
What fighters do you like today? Who are your favorite fighters now?
You know what? Golovkin is obviously one of the top ones that I like. Cotto is still surprising me the way he's fighting, you know, at the age he is. Canelo, he's okay. He's okay. I'm still not sold convincingly on him. And Danny Garcia was one guy that I thought was going to be the guy, but then when he fought that kid Herrera, I was a little disappointed. You know, I was a little disappointed. But, you know, like, again, I still gave him the benefit of the doubt because that's how boxing is. You may never know who you're going to fight and who's going to make you look a little bad. But at the time right now, those would be my guys. Those would be, like, the guys that I like watching.
So you brought them both up. What's your opinion on Cotto against Canelo?
It's going to be a good fight. I mean, this is going to be a fight where I feel that Cotto has his chance in the first rounds, in the early rounds. And Canelo might pull it out at the end, though. I think Canelo might do it at the end. I just feel that Cotto's a little over the hill, per se, for the young guy. So, not to bash on the old guys, but, you know, I mean, they are making a lot of noise. But I don't know. I just see Canelo in the later rounds. Winning decision. No knockout. I don't think he'll be able to knock.
Would you give Canelo a chance against Golovkin?
I don't know. No, I don't think so, bro.
No, I don't either.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. Not at all. Either of them guys. Either of them guys. I don't think Golovkin, the way he fights, he's a strong fighter and a pressure fighter. So, I don't know. I don't give him a chance.
Yeah, the only guy I see giving him trouble would be if he moves up and fights Andre Ward.
Exactly. And because of Ward's boxing ability, you know.
Yeah, Ward's a great boxer. But he has been off for a while, too. So.
Sure.
But, Will, we're about out of time. It was an honor to have you on and talk to you, David. And I really congratulate you to the utmost on your induction into the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. You can come back on the show whenever you want, sir.
Thank you very much. And the honor was all mine, guys.
Dave, you got anything else?
Great to talk to you, David. And, by the way, you know, for all the vertically challenged people in the world, I'm right there with you. You're not the shortest guy in the world.
Yeah, Dave's like 4'6".
No, he's not. I'm actually 5'6", so I think we're the same height.
No, I always said I was 5'6", but I was actually an inch shorter.
Oh, you should have said you were an inch taller, so you could have been taller than Dave.
My wife, I always tell people I'm 5'6" in heels. They just never asked me, you know, if it was a latch or heels.
Well, that would make you like Caitlyn Jenner, then, if you were in heels.
Oh, no, no, no. Let's not go there. No, sir.
Well, we got to be okay with that, though, so don't worry about it.
men heels, you know, the boots.
Oh, okay. Well, you didn't say men heels, so, and I've never heard boots called men heels, but all right. I'll let it slide this time, David.
I appreciate it.
Well, hey, thanks for calling in, David.
Thank you guys for having me on. It was a pleasure.
Oh, pleasure was all ours.
All right, have a good one.
You too. Thanks a lot, David.
Yeah. Thanks.
Bye.
All right, Dave Sadursky, do you have any closing comments?
It was great to talk to David tonight and, you know, hear about his career and, you know, great time on the show.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is this, the way he wanted to be remembered by fans is the way I remember him. He was a guy that always gave everything he had. I think he was a very underrated fighter. I mean, his fight with Morales, I watched that again today because I hadn't seen it since the night I watched it live. And, I mean, that was a give-and-take battle. I mean, he's fighting a legend, and he got the best of him in a close fight. The fight with Pacquiao, I actually thought he was going to beat Pacquiao. I didn't realize just how good Pacquiao was at that time, and I thought David would be too big for him. I mean, you're looking at a man that made the Olympic team. He was the WBC lightweight champion of the world. He's been inducted into the Illinois Boxing Hall of Fame. And, I mean, just like you said, I mean, I could see him making it to the International Boxing Hall of Fame. I mean, career-wise, yeah. I mean, he's got a win over Morales. I mean, does Gotti have a win that good? And he's in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. Exactly. And a really, you know, a really nice guy and a really inspirational story.
Yeah, great guy. I mean, we wish him all the best, and I would like to have him on again someday.
Awesome. Awesome.
But, hey, remember, you're listening to The Grueling Truth on NGSC Sports, brought to you by Gridiron Mo, the new interactive football app. Make sure you check it out at www.gridironmo.com. Tomorrow night, we will have San Francisco 49ers weekly show with host Matt Anderscavage and his co-host, former 49er great Dexter Carter. Then also tomorrow night, me and Matt will come back with our baseball show with former Major League All-Star, Major League Baseball pitcher Mike Lucas. Mike pitched for the San Francisco Giants, the Cincinnati Reds, pitched in a 1979 All-Star game, couple World Series. And then Thursday night, we'll have former Viking Charger legend offensive guard Ed White, who played in all four Super Bowls the Vikings were in, played in the Mud Bowl game with the Vikings, the Hail Mary game with the Vikings against the Cowboys. Then, to top that all off, he goes to San Diego, you know, with Dan Fouts, Don Coryell, all those guys, and plays in maybe the greatest football game ever played, the 81 AFC Divisional Playoff double overtime win against Miami. Follows that up by the next week playing the coldest game in NFL history against the Cincinnati Bengals in 1981 AFC Championship game. And if you've listened before, you know that's my favorite game in history. It's one time my team won a playoff game. So, hey, make sure you check us out. You can follow us at ngscsports.com on Twitter. You can follow me at RiverMonster11 on Twitter. Dave still is 30 years behind the time and has no Twitter. Dave, your assignment next week is to have a Twitter.
Yes. Yes, I have my assignment.
You can check Dave out on ringsidereport.com or ringsidereports.com, Dave.
Ringsidereport.com and Mythical Boxing on Facebook.
And Mythical Boxing on Facebook. So make sure you tune in tomorrow night, Mike Lacoste, San Francisco 49er Weekly Show. For my good pastor, Dave Sadursky, you're listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legend speaks.